All right, so we're in a series on Titus. This is our third message on Titus. We're kind of going through, and Titus talks about how do you really build healthy churches? How do you really teach people how to walk with Jesus? All that kind of stuff. So I'm going to start off telling you part of my story about my life, kind of growing up in church. So I grew up in church, but the churches I grew up in, we focused a lot on sin. And I liked it when we were in our DBS, we were saying, what does it say about people? And Jeanette was like, we're bad. I'm like, yeah, right? As a kid, like, I got that drilled into me so hard, right? We called it total depravity, which is biblical, right? Like, we are sinful, right? And we need Jesus. But the problem for me was there was never a solution, right? It was like, I would pray, I would get forgiven, but then I would just keep doing the things I'd always done, and I didn't know how to stop. And I remember a day, we had Sunday school, so we would come before church early and we would learn some things from the Bible. And I remember our teacher, it was so extreme, they had taken this verse in Romans that says, he who dies has done away with sin, right? And so there, our church's interpretation of that was like, you won't stop sinning till you die, right? And so so above the door, they had this sign that said, death is the exit to sinning. And that's still like in my mind, right? And so there was not a lot of hope for me to actually become better. It was just more, okay, I'm a bad person, I'm a sinner, I need to repent, get forgiven, but I'm just gonna keep doing bad stuff until I die or Jesus returns. So that was my mindset. And so really, it shouldn't come as a surprise when I was in middle school, high school, I started falling into some sin that men typically struggle with, right? I would be on my computer, I would look at pictures I shouldn't be looking at. And I was not able to stop. It became something that I just kept doing. I knew it was wrong, right? I had gone to Sunday school, gone to church. I didn't want to do it, really, but it was something that just became part of my life and I was kind of stuck with. And so I'm going to kind of talk you through that story as we go through this passage and tell you what Jesus did for me, because I think Titus really speaks to some of these things. So we're going to start verses 11 and 12. It says here, for the grace of God has been revealed, bringing salvation to all people. And we are instructed to turn from godless living and sinful pleasures. We should live in this evil world with wisdom, righteousness, and devotion to God. So just for a bit of context in Titus, if you were here last week, Jaden preached through the beginning part of chapter 2. In the beginning part of chapter 2, Paul is talking to Titus, and he's telling him some very specific things. So I think about that as like the what. Like, this is what you should do, right? Teach the women not to talk bad about other people, right? Teach the men to be self-controlled. Help them teach other people, right? So it's very nitty-gritty. And then when we get here in verse 11 to 15, Paul kind of switches from the what to the why and the how. And so basically what he's saying here is all that stuff I just told you, Titus, all that teaching, all these things that people should and shouldn't be doing, all of that we do and we pursue because of what Jesus has done for us. That's kind of the context of what he's saying here. So from my story, I would read passages like this and I would kind of get depressed and just feel guilty because all that my church taught me was willpower. So tell me if this has been you, right? You kind of feel this like, man, I should just try harder not to sin. And if I'm still sinning, I'm not trying hard enough. Has anyone felt that way before? Like, that was me my whole childhood, right? I'm just not trying hard enough. And there's a lot of guilt that comes with that. So for me, when I was struggling with the sin, you know, that I mentioned to you guys, really I was on my own. I didn't feel comfortable talking to people at church or talking to my family about it. I think I kept it to myself and I really wasn't able to overcome. I just kept struggling. And I would pray, I would bring it to Jesus, but nothing really changed. It was mostly just willpower. Like, I have to try harder. And there was this lie. Nobody ever said this to me, but I kind of just picked it up in church that Jesus can't free me. Right? He can forgive me, but he can't really actually help me stop or overcome what I'm struggling with. So I was stuck. And the context in Crete is very similar, right? We read a couple weeks ago, if you look at chapter 1, that there's these false teachers in Crete that Paul's warning Titus about. He's saying, hey, there's these guys going around, they just care about themselves, and they're telling people, you believe in Jesus? Okay, that's fine, but you also have to be circumcised. Okay, so they're telling people, it's not enough to believe in Jesus. You also have to do some works, right? Kind of like me growing up. You believe in Jesus, but you also have to try really hard and do this thing on your own. Later, when we get to chapter 3, we'll see they're also telling people, hey, you have to follow these very strict dietary laws. And so they were taking the gospel and they were tacking on all of these conditions, hoops you had to jump through in order to be saved, in order to be good. And so Paul's telling Titus, he's like, hey, watch out, because these people aren't preaching the true gospel. So that's really the purpose of this book. And I love this passage because there's that word grace, right at the beginning. And so grace, when we think about grace, we hear it a lot, but what is it? Well, grace is a couple ways to think about it. One is unmerited favor, right? It's help that I don't deserve, right? So as we see in this passage, right, Jesus came when we were still sinful, right? We hadn't got our act together yet, but he came and he demonstrated his love and his power for us in the midst of that. Grace is also God's power. It's his strength to help us overcome. So that word grace is so huge. And it's interesting, if you look at other religions, if you guys have learned to research other religions or practice or whatever, pretty much every other religion says, hey, you have to do good works, you have to do enough good stuff, and then you'll be okay to, you know, go to heaven or be with God or whatever. Yeah, it's very much works, and then you can be with God. And Christianity is so radical because it's backwards, right? It says Jesus came, God did something, you just have to come to him, and then he's actually going to give you the power to be good, because you just can't do it on your own. So that's the message here, what Paul is saying. He's like, God's grace has come, and we can now do all this good stuff, not because we're just trying really hard to be good people, but actually because when Jesus died, he actually gave us power, that grace, to actually change, right? It's not on us. So that's the hope, that's the good news that he's really highlighting here. A lot of people, I've heard this a lot, maybe you've heard it too, but I'll share the gospel with somebody. I'll say, hey, do you want to read the Bible? They're like, well, I want to come to church as soon as I get my life together. As soon as I get my life in order. Has anybody heard people say that? Yeah, I hear that a lot, right? And there's this lie of the enemy that says, you know what? You're not worthy to come into community. You're not worthy to be with God, read the Bible, until you've cleaned up your act, so to speak. And that's a lie. That's the opposite of the gospel, right? That's the enemy trying to keep us from God. So I just want to highlight that for you guys. So for me, back to my story, I struggled for a lot of years with this sin. And, you know, Brandon and I got married. I was still struggling. But I realized eventually, a friend of mine, he invited me to this group. He's like, hey, come to this group. And in that group, I was able to just share my whole story. I was able to have people pray for me. And in like that first moment when they prayed for me, all of a sudden it's like that sin lost its power over my life. And I would still get tempted, but I've never gone back. And I had just this aha moment. It was like, man, I spent so many years trying really hard to be a good person and it never worked. Like, I just couldn't do it. And then in a single moment, I get vulnerable, I have people pray over me, and something changed. And I'm free. And so that was when the lights went on for me, of like, that's the gospel. It's that all God's asking me to do is surrender and come to him in community, and then he's going to do the work that needs to be done. So the one thing I'll share here in this passage too, we were kind of talking about in our DBS, there's that wisdom, righteousness, and devotion. And really, this covers every part of who we are, right? Wisdom is a surrendered mind. Righteousness is a surrendered heart to God. And devotion is our will fully surrendered to God. So Paul's saying, like, hey, give every part of yourself to God. So this leads us into verse 13. So this picks up where 12 left off. It says, while we look forward with hope to that wonderful day when the glory of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ will be revealed. And in this passage, the word that stands out to me is hope. And we talked about that too, right? Hope is not a word that we hear a lot when we watch the news or when we talk to people at the grocery store. But we have hope one day because of our devotion to God. When he returns, we know he's going to make all things new. He's going to bring us with him, and he's going to wipe the tears of sadness from our eyes, right? And so not everyone has that hope, and that's the hope we get to share with people. And the way I like to think about this, so I know a number of you have probably fasted because Jared's really hardcore and he tells everybody to fast, right? So like, okay, fine. So, and we believe in the power of fasting, right? So when I fast, halfway through, I'll get these thoughts like, that french fry is looking pretty good. Nobody's really watching right now. You know, I don't know. Maybe I prayed enough. Maybe the fast isn't doing anything anyway. I'm not sure, you know? Anybody been there? Yeah? Okay, just me. But when I'm fasting, I can kind of talk myself through because I can say, man, this fast is temporary. It's going to end on such and such day. And after that, then I can eat that french fry. And I can eat, you know, all this good stuff. And I think about life like that too sometimes. In this passage, he's saying, hey, say no to a lot of stuff. All those sinful pleasures, all those things you want to do, say no to those. It's like, what? That's hard. Like, that's all I'm watching all these people, like, you know, do whatever they want and have fun. And here I am, and people call me goody two shoes or whatever because I'm trying to live out what this is saying, right? But the beautiful hope is that this life is going to end, and after, everything's going to be perfect and every desire is going to be fulfilled, right? And so I can live a really focused life of sacrifice, right? In this life, say, Jesus, I'm going to give up everything to be your disciple. And I have hope that there's actually a reward, right? God rewards us for that sacrifice. So that kind of fasting has helped my mindset in that sense. So let's jump to verse 14. It says here, he gave his life to free us from every kind of sin, to cleanse us, and to make us his very own people, totally committed to doing good deeds. And so Paul here is kind of fleshing out the gospel a little more, right? What is everything Jesus has done for us? So to really unpack this for us, I want to take you guys through just a story. Okay, so I'm going to have you use your imagination a minute. You okay with that? Okay. So if you want to, you can close your eyes or not. You can keep them open. Up to you. But I want you to imagine this. I want you to imagine you grew up as a young child and you didn't have any parents, right? You're an orphan. Right? And in that life, you know, you basically lived on the streets, you were hungry, you didn't know where your next meal was going to come from, you didn't have a place to lay your head at night, right? So you can imagine, like, the struggle you're experiencing, right? The fear, the insecurity, and maybe anger. And, you know, you're kind of doing whatever it takes, right? So you probably have to steal just to get food for yourself to stay alive. And eventually, all that kind of catches up with you. You get arrested. They put you in jail, right? So they lock up your hands. You're in a cell, right? And you're like, man, how did I get here? I don't know when I'm going to get out, right? I'm stuck. There's nobody's going to come for me, right? I don't have anybody. And you're sitting there. You got some food, some water, but that's it. And then one day and a prison guard walks up with this man you've never seen before, and he has just this kindness in his eyes. And your prison guard, he tells you, hey, this man, he paid for you to go. Like, you can go free. And you're like astonished. He comes in, he unlocks the handcuffs, and they pull you out of that cell. And you're like, wow, this is amazing. And you're ready to just walk back to that same life you had on the streets, right? You're ready to walk back there and just do the only thing you've ever known, right? And as you start to walk away, this man calls you and he says, hey, wait a minute. I actually want you to come live at my house. I actually want you to become my son or my daughter. I want to adopt you. And your, like, jaw hits the floor. You're like, what in the world? Are you serious? Like, wow. And in that moment, there's also some kind of shame and embarrassment, right? Because you've lived your life on the streets. Your hygiene's not the best, right? So you kind of stink. You haven't been taking care of yourself. You haven't been able to in jail, right? And so He tells you, don't worry about it. Come over to my house. You can take a shower. We'll get you a nice pair of clothes. And so you do. You're able to wash, clean yourself. And then he invites you to his table to sit with him and his family and just enjoy this lavish meal. So I want you to imagine, how would that impact you? So feel free to share a word or a phrase. If that's you, your whole life has changed. How does that impact you? What are you feeling? What do you do in that moment? Yeah, it's overwhelming, right? What was yours? Thankful? Don't deserve it, right? Yeah. Yeah, so all those things, right? It's like, wow, how did I get this? You know, am I worthy? And what I want to emphasize here is, believe it or not, this is actually every one of our stories, right? Before Jesus came into our lives, we were fatherless spiritually, right? We didn't have a heavenly father. And we were actually trapped. We were enslaved by sin, scripture says. And when we sin, we're actually its slaves. And we were unclean before God, right? We were bad, right? We weren't able to come before a holy God. But when we accept Jesus, right? When we decide to get baptized, which is beautiful that you guys, your family get to do that today, right? Everything changes in that moment, because somebody paid the price for us, right? It says Jesus paid with his life. He paid what we couldn't pay when we were in that prison cell, right? And imagine, right, not only are we free, right, but we're not only free, he then washes us clean, right? So it says in the verse, it says he freed us from every kind of sin. He cleanses us, makes us clean, and he makes us his own, right? He takes us into his family. Right? So he doesn't just say, oh, you're free, you're clean, all right, head back to the streets. He says, no, come, be a part of my family. And so this is the holistic gospel, right? For me, as a kid, I didn't get the holistic gospel. I missed the freedom part, right? So I was nice and clean. Jesus adopted me, but I was still in my prison cell, locked up. He's like, you're part of my family, you're just not over at the house, right? You're still locked up, right? And that's a bummer, right? That's a big bummer. When we share the gospel, when we live the gospel, we've got to have this holistic gospel where God's power frees us, his grace cleanses us, his holiness comes over us, and we now belong to a family, the family of God. Okay? So that's the story. And so I want to touch on this issue of identity. And this came up in our group too, right? This idea that I'm a sinner, I'm bad. So I want to ask you guys a question. How many here, I know Jared would raise his hand, but he's over there. But how many of you would say you're a runner? You would say, yes, I'm a runner. Zero people. Okay, Jared, we need you. Okay, no. Okay, let me ask you this question. How many of you have ever run in your life? You're a kid on the playground. Your kid is running into the street, right? There's an emergency, fire alarm's going off, something, right? I think, like, everybody raised their hand, right? So, is being a runner and running the same thing? No, it's not the same. Because running is something, it's an action, right? Everybody's done that. Okay? Being a runner, what's different about that? What makes you a runner? Discipline, yeah. Was it? Ownership? Okay, like, this is me, yeah. It's a lifestyle, right? So I grew up believing I'm a sinner. But the problem is that's actually not what the gospel says, right? The gospel says that, hey, when I believe in Jesus, yeah, I might still sin sometimes, right? Like, you might run sometimes, right? We all need to occasionally. It doesn't make you a runner. Me sinning doesn't make me a sinner. It doesn't change my identity, because when Jesus came to my prison cell, he set me free. He brought me into his family. He actually changed my identity. He changed my last name, right? And so I still mess up sometimes. But the Bible actually says, I'm a saint. I'm a saint. I can sin. I can mess up sometimes. But my identity is actually not a sinner. It's a saint. And that took a long time to sink in for me, because I was in this world of, I'm just a sinner saved by grace. for a long time, right? I was a sinner, but I'm not anymore, right? And that's the beauty of the gospel of baptism. So let's look at verse 15. Let's try and land this plane here. So verse 15, this is kind of out of left field, it seems, right? And all of a sudden, Paul is saying, you must teach these things and encourage the believers to do them. You have the authority to correct them when necessary, so don't let anyone disregard what you say. Okay, so like we said, those verses before, they were kind of the why, right? Why do we try and live a godly lifestyle? Why can we even attempt this at all? Well, it's because Jesus came, he paid, and he made a way by his power that we could live a different life. And then this is really the how. He's telling Titus, how do you do this? How do you walk this out with people? And so there's really three actions here to do. One is teach, one is encourage, and one is correct. So teach, encourage, correct. And I'm gonna kind of focus on the correct part, because I think that, you know, it's fine. We can teach people things that we know. That's cool. Encouraging people, that's kind of like nice. People like that. Oh, I feel so encouraged. Like, wow. But to correct people, I find to be the hardest. I don't know. There's some people out there who, like, that's their jam, right? They're like, get me on Facebook comments. I'm just going to correct people all day long, right? That's not, it doesn't excite me, okay? But, you know, so I'm going to share a story with you. So Jared and I, we've known each other a long time. So before even, sorry, we got a helicopter. So Jared and I known each other a long time, and we would call each other once a month and just pray for each other, encourage each other, see how life's going. And Jared doesn't remember this story. He was looking over my sermon and he's like, I did that? It's like, yeah, you did. But anyway, I was in a season of my life where it was really hard for me to get up early and pray. So our kids were really young, and I was reading the Bible at one point. I came across this verse that says, in 1 John, it says, in this life, we are like Jesus. And I'm like, oh man, this is amazing. I don't have to pray. I just have to go do the stuff Jesus would do. And so, yeah. So I'm telling Jared, I had this amazing insight from the Bible. I don't need a prayer life. All I have to do is just go be nice to people and go, you know, pray for people, do the things Jesus would do. And Jared, you know, he wasn't stern or anything, but he, you know, was very firm in just saying, no, Anthony, like, you need a prayer life. This, and here's from the Bible, right? And I was so embarrassed. I'm like, here's the person I look up to. And all of a sudden, he's like, you're just wrong. It's like, oh, no. Oh, man, I thought I was sharing this great insight with you. And but I'm so grateful to have people like Jared in my life who are willing to correct me or willing to rebuke me, because who knows where my spiritual life would be had it not been for that conversation with Jared and his courage to speak into my life. And so what Paul is saying here is, when we have people in our life who have given us authority, whether we're leading a DBS and those people are saying, yeah, I want you to teach me, I want to learn from you, or we have people we're in close relationship with, whatever that is, that this is actually the key to everything that's come before, is how do we help people grow and walk this out? Well, we can't do it alone. And we need to share with people, right? We need to teach and correct and help them along. And the authority piece is really important. And the analogy I'll give you is this, right? Has anybody, it might even happen today, right? So look out. But if you've been at a party and somebody's just got like ketchup on their face, you know, like that. And you're like, you see it, but you're like, I don't see it, right? Like, you have that dilemma. They're talking, you don't hear what they're saying, because you're like, do I tell them? Do I be that guy? Right? So my encouragement is, be that person who tells somebody, because if somebody tells you, right, aren't you grateful? When Jared told me, that's not the Bible, I was embarrassed, but I was grateful, right, that he told me. And so my challenge to you is, be courageous enough to be that person who's willing to, in love, speak into somebody's life and tell them, hey, this is what you should be doing. Right, wipe that ketchup off your face. So I want to close with this idea of, how do you rebuke in a healthy way? Because that is a question that comes up when we talk about this, right? Because we've all seen social media, right? And it's like just toxic, right? Like back and forth. Yeah. So this can leave people with like kind of bad taste in their mouth. So I came up with kind of three ways. How do we correct people in a healthy way? One is follow authority structures, right? So like Paul's telling Titus, he's saying, hey, now you have authority over these believers in Crete. So he's saying, cool, now you can do this stuff for them. You could teach them, correct them, encourage them. Okay, so he had a little sphere of influence that he was responsible for. It's not everybody, but it's these people right here. So those people that have given you authority over their life, or that somebody's given you authority, you can correct them. I would say correct out of love. That's the second one. So when I was talking to Jared, he didn't do it to spite me. He didn't do it to go, ha, you're wrong. But he did it because he cared about me, right? And I could feel that. And then the third one is rebuke or correct in relationship, right? So you're not going to go to the grocery store cleric and go like, hey, you should get your act together, right? But if you've been walking with somebody and you have that, you know, long-term relationship, cool, then you maybe have the right to speak into somebody's life. So don't go on social media. Don't just blast random people. But do it with authority, do it out of love, do it in relationship so that they can become better. So let's close with this idea, right? To get free, for me, I needed to surrender and just fully rely on God, right? So that's the first part we talked about. I also needed to come out of isolation and come under healthy leadership and authority where other men could speak into my life, pray for me, correct me, and hold me accountable, right? Who likes accountability? Probably nobody. Cool, yay! That's amazing. It's not comfortable, right? Because it holds us to a standard. But it's so important if we're going to grow more like Jesus. So, I'm going to give you guys